and it comes down to $2.753 million. Like to comment on that, because I wonder whether or not you're going to have to spend that money to actually allay the fears on the information that's somehow banging around about the circular vaccine.
Why don't you stop, Jane? I hope you will speak to the media about
it. Thank you. Yes, I do think we are into damage control, that the misleading documentary has led to some parents becoming fearful. And the 0800 immune line is now, since the playing of the documentary, has seen or has had double callers to that line from parents. Usually the line, the key callers are health professionals, so it's parents who are concerned, they are angry, they feel that they have been misled. The consequence of that can be quite dramatic. We know that when the link was made between measles vaccine and autism in the UK, that the vaccination rate dropped, the coverage from 90% to 80%. And as you would have seen in the media, there are now outbreaks of measles. The same thing happened in relation to pertussis. And we know from people on the ground that given the this uncertainty that's been generated from this TV program, that hearing from our outreach workers that our priority groups are less inclined to consent to the proceeding as being.
So what programs have you got in place then to actually ensure that these at-risk groups, because they are at-risk groups, are actually vaccinated?
We are continuing to vaccinate in the outreach setting. I think that's clearly a priority for getting to the high-needs groups. We are again looking at a communication strategy to counterbalance the misleading and unbalanced media that we've seen recently.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm just following on that. Do you agree that spending $200 million of public money on one of the largest mass vaccination campaigns in history is a major public health initiative, and would you agree that people in general, and MPs in particular, have a right and probably a duty to question that expenditure and whether it has been effectively worthwhile?
Yes, I do. $200 million is the most spent on a single health initiative, and I think it is right and proper that it be properly scrutinised.
Well, I'm just wondering why in a paper you wrote, published May 2006, you said at a vaccine research conference, the Independent Safety Monitoring Board has enhanced public confidence and assisted us in the management of the anti-immunisation menace. Do you consider anyone who asks questions about this public, this program, this the largest public health initiative in recent times, to be a menace?
No, I don't believe them all to be a menace. I believe those that promulgate misleading information or misinformation can have an impact on individuals, on parents, and lead to a lower vaccination rate, and I think that that has an impact in the future, a serious impact in the future.
I mean, I just wonder from what the Director General thinks, whether it's appropriate for officials to call anyone or refer to anyone who criticises the vaccine, given that there are genuine concerns around, as a menace.
No, I think it's a level of degree. I would question anyone's, or I would be supporting anyone's right to question any health spending in any area. But the Ministry is concerned over the events of recent weeks, where we have seen what I consider to be an imbalanced view reported through the media around this particular campaign. What we're not seeing are the hundreds of families and people affected as a result of this disease, the children who have died inside the district health board that I previously managed, the children who have lost brothers and sisters, and so it goes. We haven't seen that. And I think, that's also an important side that the public need to see to inform a judgment on whether vaccination is an important public health investment. We're not seeing that, and I think we need to see some of that in order to be able to form a conclusion, because I would want it on the record and say that this program will set kick off tomorrow. If it were to start tomorrow, as a father of three, I'd be the first in line still to get my kids vaccinated.
It's interesting that the very allegation you're making about presenting an unbalanced view is made about the public information that you wrote out yourself, in which people said you weren't advising parents adequately about the potential adverse effects, that you were telling children coming home saying they were going to be killed at the vaccine. That's precisely the sort of allegations that your program was presented in an unbalanced fashion, leading to many children being absolutely terrified that they were going to die if they weren't immunised.
Well, I tell you, some children will die if they weren't immunised. And so I think, you know, that's an important point to be made, and so you know, there, New Zealanders, when the campaign kicked off, New Zealanders were very keen for the uptake of the vaccine. As a chief executive of the district health board who piloted that, we saw that the desire for that vaccine to be uptake, and we're seeing a reduction in illness and disability as a result.
Now, the vaccine, when it was only given provisional approval, and the reason, according to your own press releases, is that the data you provided was less comprehensive than is required for a full consent. Why was it only granted further provisional approval recently? I mean, why, if it's so good and effective, as you say, hasn't it had full approval and a full licence?
The provisional consent provision allows for the use of a vaccine or medicine when the benefits outweigh the risks, so in the situation of an epidemic. And this means that there may not be a full dossier in terms of the effectiveness information available. However, it does require significant and sufficient safety data.
But that was 2 years ago. You've now had 2 years to get the full approval and full consent. Why are we now having an extension of provisional consent rather than moving to full approval and full license?
Well, there is no problem with rolling over a provisional consent, and I understand that MedSafe is considering the full license application and reviewing the effectiveness data.
And would you agree that in the absence of stage 3 clinical trials, that it is something of an experiment?
No, I do not accept that terminology at all. This is not an experiment. It never was an experiment. Nobody would experiment on New Zealand children. This was a very, very carefully staged, designed series of clinical trials that was internationally peer-reviewed at every step of the way. Nobody on the meningococcal management team, a team of experts, would take any risks with New Zealand children.
You said to yourself in the paper I was referring to, it was a calculated gamble. Would that be fair to say it was a calculated gamble?
I think that I was unwise in using those words. I think it was a calculated risk. Everything we do entails risk. And as the rollout and the clinical trials were designed, we took calculated risks that were carefully managed, and nobody took any risks in terms of safety.
Now, you'll be aware that the Norwegian government has established an inquiry into their meningococcal vaccine, the one that was used as a parent vaccine in New Zealand. And their inquiry includes concern that a safety and efficacy trial on teenagers in Norway was allowed to be used to justify giving a vaccine to a million New Zealand children, including 100,000 babies. Do you agree with Professor Solbakk, the Norwegian professor, who's recently been appointed chief bioethicist at UNESCO, that it was unethical to use trial data from a different vaccine, used in a different age group, in a different country, to justify vaccinating infants with another vaccine in New Zealand?
I think the first point to make is that we did not solely rely on the Norwegian data. This MensB was trialled in children in counties Manukau right down to infants before a rollout, so we were not relying solely on data from Norway. But there is considerable additional data. This program did not solely rely on Norwegian data. There is data from and information from Cuba and other trials and other vaccines of a similar sort.
With respect, you did answer my question as to whether you agree with Professor Solberg that it was unethical to use this trial, that particular, whether or not there were other things you may have also relied on, is not the question. The question is, was it unethical to use the data from a different age group to justify vaccinating another age group?
And I'm saying we didn't do that. We actually trialled our vaccine in that age group before we rolled it out. We did not rely on information in relation to infants in Norway because, as you all know, that was trialled including 14-year-olds, and it was also given to a smaller group of infants, but not sufficient
how
to how give us confidence.
How many infants was it given to before it was rolled out?
In New Zealand, yeah. Infants, we undertook a trial that I think in terms of volunteers, there were about 375 volunteers and 6 weeks, yes.
Now, the Medicines Assessment Advisory Committee said in April 2004 that the meningococcal vaccines being approved, and they relied very heavily on the basis of the Norwegian data. So if the Norwegians are now doing an inquiry into that data, why aren't we following suit?
I think I understand the Norwegians are considering some aspects of the trials. I think they are looking at some issues that were raised in the documentary. And therefore, I think it is still clearly appropriate that that information is part of the dossier.
Well, I mean, if the Norwegian government think there are sufficient concerns to have an inquiry, why wouldn't we?
There is no cause for an inquiry. The Norwegians are looking into certain issues, and obviously that will provide us with reassurance, will provide New Zealand parents with reassurance that everything has been entirely appropriate. So we support that inquiry, but we are not concerned. I don't think there's anything new there that makes us particularly concerned.
But doesn't it seem odd that we seem to be welcome it because we'll answer any doubts that New Zealand children, New Zealand parents might have? Doesn't it seem odd that some inquiry in Norway would be welcome to allay their doubts? Shouldn't we be doing something in New Zealand to allay the doubts of New Zealand parents?
No, I think this has arisen from the Norwegian documentary which was shown in Norway about a month before it was shown here in New Zealand. And that raised concerns. That documentary was misleading. It was unbalanced. It presented figures that were, as I said, misleading. It talked about six deaths. In fact, there had been three in the under-20s. It talked about case numbers. And it also was very unbalanced in terms of looking solely at risks. It presented four examples of serious adverse events, of which three have other probable causes.
The Norwegian inquiry was looking into wider issues, as you are aware. And given the increasing concerns about the safety of the parent vaccine in Norway, why did the Ministry of Health disband the Independent Safety Monitoring Board that's been evaluating the safety of the vaccine in June?
The Independent Safety Monitoring Board considered all the data up to the 30th of June, and they considered Menzies to have a very good safety profile. That was their job. 3 million doses is a lot of vaccine to be delivered. I think we can be confident in relation to those results that we have a safe vaccine.
During the last vaccination campaign in the 1987 of meningococcal, there was another, I think 130,000 children were vaccinated. They appointed an expert, Dr. David Jamison, because of concern with adverse effects. He was appointed to examine the children who had suffered adverse effects to the vaccine. Is a similar expert, is there a similar expert appointed in New Zealand to examine children who have experienced adverse effects so that we can, particularly serious adverse effects, so that one can allay fears that parents may have?
That was in relation to some issues that happened that's specifically required investigation. We haven't had that same situation happen in relation to MEANS-B. MEANS-B has been rigorously monitored through various methods,
And yes. But the individual children who had adverse, I mean, we've got 2,000 reporting to the Catholic Calm, we've got some going to the ACC, etc. Is anyone looking at those children to make sure, as we did previously, that there aren't links or concerns here?
Well, the systems are designed to look for those links and concerns, and what has been shown through the CAR monitoring system is what we expected to see in relation to an adverse event profile for men's lead is what we have seen. So that gives us confidence that we haven't missed anything in relation to men's lead.
My final question for now is that do you think that there are any limits to the number of vaccines, particularly that young children and babies can be given? Between birth and 2 years, they're now getting 25 vaccines for 11 different diseases. Whereas, say, a decade ago, it was a fraction of that. Do you think there is any limit to the number of vaccines that can be safely given to particularly young children?
From my knowledge of immunology, there isn't. That an infant, once it starts crawling and moving around on the ground and eating dirt, is exposed to so many more antigens than we deliver in terms of the immunisation schedule.
But that is different from injecting those antigens
It's very similar. The immune system reacts very similar to these different antigens that it is exposed to, and we don't believe that that providing multiple antigens through vaccination has any detrimental effect.
So you don't think there is any limit? Do you agree with the expert in the UK who said it would be perfectly acceptable to give 1,000 vaccinations to young children?
As long as those were in one vial, I would expect that that would not overwhelm the immune system. I think that would be an issue in relation to numbers of needles, but certainly not in terms of numbers of antigens.
So 1,000 antigens wouldn't overwhelm the immune system.
I think we need to make a point that we're a long way from 20 to 1,000, but what is undeniable is the impact that immunisation has had on the health of our young people. We saw earlier on a significant reduction in infant mortality occurring in the last 2 years. Immunisation has been a key part of achieving those outcomes, improved health outcomes for young children.
I just wanted to know whether you thought there was any limit to the number of vaccines, and Dr. O'Halloran has answered that question. No limit at all.